subject that nobody likes. No, a few people like it, but a lot of people really don't like it. It's the subject of authority and being subject to authority. It's the subject of being subject to authority. And it's something that I've noticed, and particularly in this area. You know, there are some areas of the country that are more submissive to authority. Do you know that? There are certain areas of the country. There are certain parts of the world, certain countries, where people are more submissive to authority than other areas of the world and other country, of this country and other world, really. Maybe you wonder, you know, like sometimes these communist bloc countries, you know, how do these leaders get away with this, and why do the people put up with it? You know what I'm talking about? Well, I would never put up with that, a lot of people in America say. And they're probably right. If you think about it, our country was founded. I'm not going to say that it was wrong for it to happen this way entirely. But just as a matter of fact, put subjectivism, emotional motivations behind us and to the side for now. The reason that our country was founded, or who our country was founded by, it was founded by a group of people, really. All the people of Europe, England, and so forth, that no longer wanted to submit to the king and to his authority. They didn't come here for greater economic potential, most of them. They came here because they didn't want to pay taxes, because they didn't want to submit to authority. Now, the authority over there may have been a terrible authority, but that's not even altogether true. Some of the people, in fact, who came over to the New World because purely for their reasons was for new opportunity, you know, to get land, and not everybody came here to escape religious persecution, you see. I think, what was the king's name at that time? George? Was it King George? A lot of people came over here. They were still loyal to King George. In fact, the colonies were pretty well divided for some time. And you know what they were called? They were called the Loyalists at that time. Anybody ever hear the Loyalists? Yeah. They were loyal to the king. They had no problem, and they really had not that much of a problem with paying the taxes. They had no problem with submitting to authority. One way, let me just tell you, it's my position that this country was founded by a mindset against authority. In fact, that's why you'll find that when this country finally did unite, the colonies, United States, the first 13 colonies, you'll find that they didn't really unite as one country, but they wanted to keep their independence from authority. And so they formed their individual and independent states. The desire to divide and form our own little entity. I look at that and I think, you know, we've been taught, in fact in school we're taught that this is good, that that's the way to do it, that it's proper, it's okay. And then we wonder why the society as a whole has a hard time submitting to authority. In the church and in religious settings, if somebody wants to divide off and split off and form their own little colony, so to speak, those of us who know the Bible know that this is wrong. It's condemned in the Bible. Except for the purposes of expansion and growth and a mission work, outreach, the idea of breaking off because I don't want to submit to your authority is condemned in the Bible. And yet that's how, in great part, why our country was formed in the first place. Why do I say that? Well, in the Bible, there's a group of people, they're called Cretans. And that's in Titus chapter 1. talk about character assassination. Talk about generalizing concerning an entire group of people. Now, you've all heard about those, pardon me, Polish jokes. You've all heard the Italian jokes, or the Irish jokes, or, and you go on and on, the Jewish jokes. And there are certain generalizations that certain other groups of people have made concerning these ethnic peoples. You know? There are certain characteristics that certain people have assigned to certain peoples of certain races or coming from certain backgrounds, you know? Generalizing. And I believe that it's wrong to do that and just to generalize and take for granted that if this guy happens to be Italian, then he's this way. Or if this guy happens to be Polish, then he's this way. Or if this guy is Irish, he's just this way. Or if he's whatever. You know, if he's German, you just take for granted he loves to kill people. I mean, don't take for granted these things. It's not right. On the other hand, looking at it non-emotionally, and my family background is made up of a few different ethnic backgrounds, you know. The English hate the Irish, and the Irish hate the English, and I'm one quarter of each. And then they call the Danes a bunch of, what do they call them, squareheads? Or blockheads, one or the other. I can't, squareheads. Okay, and I'm about half that. So, but not looking at it emotionally, where do these stereotypes come from? Is there any truth to them? Well, it's not my purpose today to discuss whether there's truth to them or not, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to show you a generalization made about a group of people and where the Bible says, yeah, in this case, it is true. Now, it's not true in every case. There are exceptions. But because there are exceptions, is it wrong to generalize? No, it's not wrong to generalize because God did it right here. In Titus chapter 1, he'll say, for many, in chapter 1, verse 10, for there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, especially Jewish ones, who must be silenced because they are upsetting whole families, teaching things they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. Oh, one of themselves, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. His testimony is true. For this reason, you better reprove them severely, that they might be sound in the faith. It's interesting how he generalizes about Cretans, but always being liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. And he's writing to Titus, who's the preacher in that on that island of Crete. And imagine Titus saying, oh, we got a letter from the Apostle Paul. Nah, I don't think you should read it. Nah, you don't want it. It was pretty good. He told me some things to do. you got to read it? Well, he wants us to establish elders. And you see, that's the good thing about this is that obviously a person who's a liar, an evil beast, or a lazy glutton is not going to be an elder. And so, although there's a generalization here, there are also exceptions, okay? Because in the first verses 5 through 9, we just started reading verse 10, verses 5 through 9, he's telling them to appoint elders in every city on Crete, and that they must fill these qualifications, which do not include being a liar, an evil beast, or a lazy glutton. A lazy leech, or a lazy mooch. A lazy glutton. But there's something there in that generalization that says now I see what he's talking about. When I look at certain places and I see that there's a certain personality that the whole area can take up. You know, you heard of Southern hospitality? You know, you can almost fill that in. Well, down south, there's a lot of areas in the south that have generally been taught to be hospitable. Have those kind of manners. Now that doesn't mean there aren't exceptions. As you go down and you'd be exposed to an exception, you'd say, yeah, I heard about that Southern hospitality. Where is it? It doesn't exist. But I've been there in 3.5 years, have experienced it. Bob, you say that the people are different down there in Texas where you visited. More hospitable, more generous, more giving. I don't see people from New York supporting, giving thousands of dollars to support somebody who's preaching in Oklahoma. And yet never really see the money. I mean, after it goes out of their hands. Never see the results. In New York, we have to see some kind of tangible, you know, give me something for it. But Oklahoma and Texas are sending, not just to me, but to a lot of people, a lot of missionaries, thousands of dollars, not only for New York, but all over the world to preach the gospel. There are exceptions to this, but that's a general observation. Let me give you one more general observation. Long Islanders are not very submissive to authority. New Yorkers are not generally very submissive to authority. The Northeast is generally not very submissive to authority. And really, we've got two major pockets in this country that are not very submissive to authority. The West Coast, California, you know, and I don't want any letters from the governor of California, and the Northeast, particularly Philadelphia, Boston, you know, New York, the major cities. You can observe this. You can see this. You can see it in the Catholic Church. And if you're a member of the Catholic Church, we don't have you here to upset you, but you can notice this, how the Pope will make a statement concerning abortion, birth control, homosexuality. And what do hundreds and hundreds of priests do? And nuns? They start marching against their Pope. Against their leader. They state their rebellion, their protest against their leader's position. And yet, I'm a good Catholic. And the Pope said I can rebel against him and be a good Catholic. I guess that's what they've been told the Pope said. But I listened to the Pope again, obviously more than they have. On the news and read what he said in the newspaper. No, that's not a way to be a good Catholic. The way to be a good Catholic is to listen to what he says, period. Period. But there's a problem there. And the problem I'm not talking about the problem with the Catholic Church this morning, you see. I'm talking about the problem with people. Now, I'm not saying that people should blindly follow whatever their leaders say. But there is a difference between that and being rebellious against someone's authority. Something that I really appreciated in growing up was the experience of the Police Boys Club. Now, the Police Boys Club is anything from basketball teams to, you know, softball teams to camping trips to, but our particular club, and a number of them at that time, way back in, you know, the early 60s, and before that, late 50s, early 60s, it was really a military club. It was a club for nautical cadets. Really, you had a bunch of little kids that were enlisted in the Navy. This is where it came back to. We had complete with classes we had to go to, first aid classes, learning how to make knots, all kinds of drill teams, learning how to march, corporal punishment, which included holding rifles out on your hands, and, you know, they lay them across your arms like this, and you start to fall too much, they put another one on there. If you complain, they put another one on there. If you dropped them, then you had to go clean the toilet or something else. Or they draw little circles on the walls and make you put your thumbs in them and then lean against them. Take four, three steps back and fall against the wall with your thumbs and stand there for half an hour. Or an hour. Or we have latrine duty. Or we get KP. And this is my idea of a fun Friday night. This is my dad's idea of fun Friday night for his son. But what, you know, I know most of the guys that were in there were the really rowdy, as we would generalize, dirtbags of our town. Rough guys. When we played, you ever hear of Ring Aledio 1-2-3? You know? And you grab the guy, Ring Aledio 1-2-3, and then you get him and you bring him back to the jail or whatever. Well, we played commandos. And we didn't know, we had a prison tent. Each side had a prison tent. And instead of going Ring Aledio 1-2-3, we hit him in the head with a flashlight and dragged him back. Knocked the wind out of him. You don't have to say anything. You just say, I got you. Bam! Come on with me. You know? They were really rough guys, but what that taught us, what I really liked about it was, and I look back now, I think, wow, and I can't believe, I mean, they actually got us to do this. They'd say, just like you've seen in movies for the military, you know, we'd have a petty officer, a chief petty officer, this guy named Bruce McLean, and he'd go, do you hear me? He'd yell at you, you know, I'm not going to do it here because I want to scare the baby. And you go, yes, sir. And he'd go, I can hear you. And you're like, yes, sir. And if you didn't do things right, man, he stepped you out, dressed you up and down verbally, and told you to get back into place, you know. You marched when he said, attention, you stood at attention. You didn't scratch. No such thing. With white gloves staying at attention in formation, no such thing as going like this. If you had an itch, you just forgot about it or went insane. Because there's no scratching. Nothing. What did it teach me? What did it teach the guys that were in there? A lot of guys, you know what it taught them? To submit to authority. I mean, when we wanted to walk in the door, there was a flag stand there, a little gangplank that they'd set up. This is in Parkway School. They'd set up all this stuff, and you'd have to stand there and go, request permission to board the ship, sir! And he'd look you up and down and say, permission granted! Come aboard, sir. And we'd have to walk aboard. Now, I'm 9 years old. 10 years old. Remember his uniform in there? Do you remember any of that? See? But I thought about that and I thought, that was good training. Today people will be going, what are you doing to my Charlie? What did you say? You're giving him a complex. Now I have to tell him he's got to go to therapy. I have to take him. I don't know what to do. He won't sleep at night. What am I supposed to do? I'm going to sue you. And people, I don't care what their ethnic background is, that's their attitude. Submission to authority. We used to throw snowballs at the Delwood milkman. And he'd come around and deliver the bottles of milk to every house. You know? In the wintertime, and when he could, he would jump out of that truck, chase us down. We're about 8, 9, 10. He'd grab us by the neck and push our faces into the snow and shove snow down our throats. And we'd choke it and try to pull snow out of your nasal passages and just about crying and upset. If we dared go home and say, what the milkman did to me, Dad? My dad would assume I did something. He wouldn't even ask me, what did you do to deserve this? He'd just beat me up and ask me about it. Because he figured, the milkman just doesn't have to go around down the street. Oh, some kids, let's get them. You know, that's not what happens. And so we had to learn how to submit to authority. If we didn't, we didn't dare complain about it, the treatment we got when we didn't submit. You heard the expression, respect your elders? In our day and age now, we not only not teach that because of child abuse and everything else that's going on, we almost can't teach that. You know, we used to tell kids, obey your elders now. And now we tell them, if anybody tells you to do anything besides mommy, you tell them to go take a walk. You tell them, you'll sue them. Tell them to call a cop. And so these kids walk around. They walk on my front lawn. They come up to my doorstep. They try to walk in my house after my son. My wife says, get out of here. And they say, yeah, you touch me and I'll sue you. There's a problem here. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. And what the problem is, I see it in the church. There are some times when I wish, because I think it would help this much, but any help would be helpful. Sometimes I wish, because I know it would help about that much, that the ministers in the Church of Christ, in this congregation, wore a priestly garb, priestly robes, and I would turn my collar around, and I still got to know, I used to have one. A big old cross about that big and hanging from a chain around my neck. And give the benediction like this. My sleeves this wide. I saw it like this. That's it, like that. Like the pictures. Not like this. like this. Okay? And I think, because people would respect me in my position. Because they would, you know what, it's true, because some people would see the position a little bit more. Because in the Lord's church, really, I'm in an equivalent position to that pastor that stands up there and goes like this. When I go to the pastor's meetings, and the minister's meetings on Long Island from all these other religious groups, I'm there in my suit like I am now. And they have their collars turned around in their robes with their big crosses around their necks. Now you and I know that the clothing is nothing. And in the days of priests of God wearing different or separate clothes went out with the Old Testament. That is our need for obedience to the law. And yet, when I say something, I mean, it's like, who are you? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that I want you to obey me no matter what I say, and that's all there is to it, okay? But a person is in a position, if the person is in a certain position, they got that way, they got that place, usually you have to know, understand, they got there by submitting. Long before you were ever asked to submit. You understand? If you go to a courtroom and there's a judge there, we feel like, why do I have to say that? That's the mindset of a lot of people around here. It's, why do I have to say, Your Honor? Why do I have to, all rise? Okay, all be seated, you know. Now presiding, the honorable, blah, 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 blah. And everybody, yeah, and even when that happens, people are laughing. I'm thinking, oh, this is ridiculous. The honorable. Your honor. And then when they address the king or the queen over here or there, they go, Your Excellency, give me a break. So ridiculous. He's just a man. And that's our mindset. But you want to know something? It's wrong. To have that attitude of arrogance is wrong. Somebody says, arrogant? The other one is arrogant. Guy walking around in robes saying, call me Your Honor. Do you know how much that man had to submit himself to other people and call them Your Honor before he got to that position of judgeship? There's a problem with rejecting or despising, resisting authority. You might think, authority. I submit to one authority, that's Christ Jesus. God is my authority. Well, if he is, I'm hoping to open your eyes today with a few other little tidbits of information. When Jesus was on trial, about to be crucified, there's an interesting scenario that takes place. In John chapter 19, and verse 10, Pilate says, therefore, Pilate said to him, you don't speak to me? Because Jesus wasn't answering him. Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate says, You will speak to me? Don't you know I have authority? I can release you, or I can crucify you. I have authority to do the both. Jesus starts, he answers him now. He never answered him before. Pilate says, I have authority. Jesus says, you would have no authority over me unless it hadn't been given to you from above. Unless it's been given to you from above. For this reason, the one who delivered me over to you has a greater sin. Talking about Judas. But there's an interesting statement Jesus makes here that we don't necessarily pick up on. Jesus admits, yeah, you have authority. It's been given to you. But because it's been given to him, does that mean he's not there anymore? Oh, in fact, when Pilate reminds Jesus of his authority, what does Jesus finally do? Which he didn't do. He answers him. He starts to talk with him. He hadn't until then. Pilate's talking to him, and Jesus is like, Pilate says, don't you know who I am? I can set you free and kill you. I have that kind of authority. Jesus says, you wouldn't have any if it hadn't been given to you from above. Because Jesus said that, Pilate tried to get rid of him, tried to set him free. Is what it says in verse 12. But there's an interesting remark there, and that is that Jesus submits himself. He's the master of the universe, creator of all things, and yet Jesus submitted to the authority of Pilate and verbally acknowledged it. Just reminded Pilate where it came from. Pilate apparently seems to agree with Jesus. Because it was as a result of that statement that Pilate sought to release Jesus after that. So he says, but he's just a man, this Pilate. Yes, but he's been given a position and authority from God, even over the Son of God, even to partake in his crucifixion. Which Pilate will pay for. I'm not saying he's sinless in this matter. But his position of authority needed to be respected. Let me show you that again in Acts chapter, book of Acts, let's see. Chapter 23. Acts chapter 23. Verse 1, and Paul, looking intently at the council, said, brethren, I have lived my life with a perfectly good conscience before God up to this day. And Ananias, the high priest, commanded those standing beside him to strike him on the mouth. So this Ananias has somebody smack Paul right in the face, right in the mouth. Ooh. Paul loses his cool, okay? He does. Here's an example, really, of temper before being aware of the whole situation. And Paul said to him, God's going to smack you in the mouth, you whitewashed wall. You think he said it the way that, you know, it's kind of like written, you just kind of read through it. God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Think that's the way you say that? You just got smacked in the mouth. You're speaking before an entire council. Somebody walks up and goes, God's going to strike you in the mouth, you whitewashed wall. You sit and try me according to the law? And in violation of the law, you had ordered me to be struck? Think he was mad? But the bystanders said, and who do you think you are to revile God's high priest? Now, were they wrong with what they did? And what the high priest did according to violation of the law? Yes. But watch this. The bystanders challenged Paul and they said, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have talked back to God's high priest like that. I don't care what he did. And Paul says, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware, brethren, that he was a high priest. For it's written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people. So what does Paul do? He explains, I'm sorry, I was ignorant. I realize I'm in violation of the law. I was wrong. Paul just got smacked in the face, and what is he doing? He's apologizing. Why? Simply because of the man's position, his authority. His authority. This principle about not you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people is the way God feels about the rulers of the people. Period. And you're going to see that also for us in the New Testament times as well, even today. And that's why when people start running down Ronald Reagan, they run down the president, they run down Mario Cuomo, they run down Nixon, calling him Tricky Dick, and all that stuff. And I, man, especially back then, can you imagine Christians being aware of this passage and what Nixon went through? So I'm not saying what Nixon did was right or wrong. It was wrong for Ananias to have Paul smacked in the face. Is my face red now? It was wrong to have that happen. It was wrong for what Pilate did to Jesus, but nevertheless, what did Paul and Jesus do? They submitted to their authority. They submitted to their authority. And what must we do? What did the people who founded this country not want to do? A good number of them. As far as old King George was concerned. They did not want to submit to his authority. Was he such an ogre that nobody wanted to submit to his authority? No, in fact, the original colonies in this country were pretty well divided over that. There was the revolutionaries and the loyalists. What's the problem? What's the problem? People don't like to submit. Look at Romans 13, just the next book after the book of Acts. Romans 13, verse 1. Again, what's the church's problem? If I write to you and say, husbands, you need to love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. What's the problem? Can you identify the problem from the solution being given? What was the problem? What was the problem? Husbands weren't loving their wives very well, were they? Well, they needed improvement, at least. And he says, no longer sue one another, no longer take one another to court. I don't want to see this brother taking brother to court, 1 Corinthians chapter 6. What do I know they were doing? They were taking each other to court. Is that fair to say? Okay, now in Romans 13 he says, let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. What's wrong? Well, he tells them later on in verse 6, you better pay taxes. In verse 7, pay taxes. What do I know the church, or some of the church at least, were considering not doing? Paying taxes. There's a problem with people, a lot of people just don't like to submit to authority. And yet they want to reap the benefits, right? I mean, everybody, I want to be in this country, I want freedom of speech, I want all this stuff, but I don't want to pay any taxes. I don't want to support this. I want to have a president, of course we don't want anarchy, but I don't want to support him. And that's the way it is in religion, too. Oh, if we know the doctor has the scalpel over us and he holds the power of life and death in his physical way, we don't even like the high salaries the doctors get. But if they can save our life, we'll buy insurance and all that we need to make it so that we can pay this guy to operate us and cut that tumor out, right? Yet a preacher who's going to save our soul, not for 10 or 20 years, but hopefully for eternity, if we remain faithful, you're in it for the money. How much do you get of that contribution? and things like this. What's the problem? There's no perception of authority and of the need for that ministry or service in that person's life. Well, if they don't feel that they need this guy that much, then obviously they feel like they got a pretty good handle on it. Yeah, you know, people are experts in everything. Most people are experts in everything, you know. Most of us, you know, we're expert doctors, right? We know all cures for everything. And me too, right? Some of you that talk to me, it's like, oh yeah, take a little of this, take a little of that, pop that pill and take a double dose of that. But it's amazing how many people are experts in religion. I mean, top-notch theologians. How much have they studied the Bible? Not much, but they know all about God. One guy told me, he says, hey, you have to talk to me about God. I studied about him in the streets. I've seen God in the streets. I guess there's a crowd of people that he's hung around with in the past that he's got away with that statement. Needless to say, he didn't get away with it that day. But it's like, hey, you don't have to talk to me, I can probably teach you a few things, you know. I don't know, maybe they can. I know, I stop and listen for a while and see, well, what do you got to share with me? And I see him in the streets, I see him in the alleys, and I think, okay, enough of his brilliance. Let's get back to the Bible. There's a problem with people submitting to authority. Romans 13, verse 1 says, let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. And who was in power at this time? Nero. Nero, the Christian killer. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Isn't that what Jesus said to Pilate? Hey, you wouldn't have any authority if God didn't give it to you. But what does that tell me about the ruler and the authority of government, for example? The police department. Every time you drive 56 or 57 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone, what are you doing? You're questioning the authority of the law of the state legislators, of the judge who will hand down a sentence, of the police officer who will question you and ticket you about that speed you're driving. You're challenging everyone's authority. Aren't you? Aren't I? That's what we do. And when we challenge that authority, make no mistake about it, it says verse 2, therefore he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. And those who oppose will receive condemnation on themselves. You will get a ticket. Not only that, but you don't want a ticket from God, because when you have to appear before his judgment, there's no way you can go back and drive slower now. It's too late. It's not as petty, but you think it's as petty as a speed limit. Well, that's only petty in the eyes of the one who's challenging the authority of that rule, that ordinance, that law, that authority. Oh man, there are people that just, you know, we just want to resist that authority. Brat? I'm not a brat. I'll do what I want, but I'm not a brat. We don't want to wear the label, but we want to act like it. Don't call me a brat, I just act like one. Rulers are not a cause for fear for good behavior, but for evil. You want to have no fear of authority? I don't want to have any fear of authority. I don't have any fear of authority. Well, do what's good, and you'll have praise from the same. That's the way to get rid of fear of authority, not say, well, I'm just going to rebel. Try to ticket me, I'll show them it's unconstitutional to even impose a speed limit. There are people that are doing that, right? Based on the Constitution, they drive without licenses. They don't have any, and they do it consciously. They refuse to get a license. They could and they don't because they think it's unconstitutional. They don't pay taxes. Why? It's unconstitutional to tax the people. No taxation without representation. Well, my viewpoints and position is not represented in the government, therefore, I don't have to pay them. says it's a lack of submission to authority. God's authority. Why? Because that government is the minister of God, verse 4, for your good. But if you do what's evil, you better be afraid. For it doesn't bear the sword for nothing. That's what you use to kill people, you know, capital punishment. It doesn't bear the sword for nothing. It's the minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the poor person or the one who practices evil. Verse 5, Romans 13. Wherefore it's necessary to be in subjection. Not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. But because of this, you also, for this reason, that's why you pay taxes. For rulers are the servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. God says he wants his servants to be paid. That's it. Hey, I'm paying taxes so Mario Cuomo can have $80,000 or $100,000 a year. So that's what the Bible says, yeah. John ain't worth 2 cents. Here's your... Oh, that's in violation of that other passage that says don't speak evil of your rulers of your people. No longer mumbling under your breath. See, that's all... there are certain people here that are saying, I don't know what he's talking about, because you don't have a problem with this, but there are a lot of people here, you know what I'm talking about. You don't like to submit. It grips you the wrong way to have to say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. It grips you the wrong way to have to do that. You know what grating is. Ever see a cheese grater? Grates you the wrong way. This you pay taxes. Render to all to whom what is due them. Tax to whom taxes due. Custom to whom custom. Fear to whom fear. Honor to whom honor. Another version and another verse will say praise to whom praise. First Peter chapter 2 and verse 13 says basically the same thing. First Peter 2. It says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority. Right now, who's in authority? Who's our king? I know he's another word, but that's what he is. Who's our king? King Reagan? King Ronald? Nobody say McDonald either. King Ronald. We call him President Reagan, but it's the same thing. He's the ruler of the people. As the king, as one in authority. Or to the governors, sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Why? For such is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of fools, of foolish men. Point is, we need to be more willing to submit to authority. Even in the world, even to people in the world, we think because we're Christians, I submit to one leader. I have one king now, King Jesus. And I don't submit to a mere man or a human institution. And there are religious groups today, entire religious groups, aren't there, that believe that the government's run by Satan, therefore I don't submit to it. I don't pledge allegiance to it, and I obey it only where it suits me. I know, I've studied with them. There are religious people who claim to be God's children, witnesses of God. They don't have to obey that. They don't have to. Certain things they will, certain things they won't. Why? The only reason that they will is because they don't want to go to jail. The reason why they won't, where they can get away with it, is because they don't believe they should. They don't need to. It's not the right thing to do. What does the Bible say? Is it the right thing to do? To obey the laws of the land. Whatever those laws are. Providing that the laws don't go against the Word of God. This thing of subjection really, it's not just in society, it's in the home. In Romans chapter 1, verse 30, we have a list of people in Romans chapter 1 that don't see fit to acknowledge God anymore. And because of this, God gives them over to a depraved mind. to do those things which are not proper. They're filled with all unrighteousness. They're with wickedness and greed and malice, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. Boy, he goes into malice again. Malice, they are gossips. Well, you know, by the way, do any of you fit in here? Oh, of course not. Okay. Slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful. There's that arrogance. Are you arrogant? Well, then you're in the same group with haters of God. You're in the same club with God haters. Are you envious? Do you have envy? Then you're in the same group with people who hate God. Slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, here you go, disobedient to parents. I'm sure glad none of us have ever fallen into that category. Because then we would be in the same group with people who are murderers and haters of God. So I'm glad we're not in that category ever, right? We're not disobedient to our parents. Without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who do this kind of stuff, including disobedience to parents, are worthy of death. That's the New Testament. Wait a minute. I thought the God of the New Testament was just love, and the God of the Old Testament was wrath and death. No, this is the New Testament. Worthy of death. They not only do the same thing, they give hearty approval to others that do them and practice them. There's a problem with people being disobedient. We need to learn to submit to authority. Let me get right to the point. In the book of Hebrews, I'd like to share a passage with you. Hebrews 13, verse 17. You know, when we first convert somebody to Jesus Christ, we first bring them to the truth. The people are excited. You're excited. Maybe some of you have already gone through this. Most people who go through what I'm about to describe are not here. They do not remain here. They are thrilled. They are impressed with maybe mine or Pat's or one of yours, ability to quote scripture and to know the Bible. I mean, really, they're impressed. And so when you can begin...